It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
It's championship weekend, so why not? Let's start with crime and punishment. And the punishment is going to Ole Miss right now because the NCAA banned Ole Miss from playing in the postseason next year. The Rebels were also hit with scholarship reductions, and former coach Hugh Freeze was suspended as part of the penalties handed down by the NCAA Committee on Infractions yesterday. The University of Mississippi released a statement said it would vigorously appeal the postseason ban, which it deemed excessive, and it does not take into account the corrective actions that we have made in personnel, structure, policies, and processes to address the issues. Ole Miss, who's 6-6 this year, isn't going to be in a bowl game anyway because they self-imposed a one-year bowl ban this past February. In the NCAA's ruling, the Rebels, who were accused of 15 Level 1 violations, were admonished for lacking institutional control and fostering an unconstrained culture of booster involvement in football recruiting. This is now the third case over three decades that has involved boosters and football program, the panel stated in its decision. Even the head coach acknowledged that upon coming to Mississippi, he was surprised, by the craziness of boosters trying to insert themselves into his program. At the hearing, Mississippi's chancellor acknowledged his institution's problem with boosters, characterizing one instance as disturbingly questionable. Greg Christopher, who was the chief hearing officer for the NCAA, and he's the AD at Xavier, said during a conference call Friday that while the committee thought the self-imposed infractions were sufficient elsewhere, the additional bowl ban was given because of the seriousness of the case and the situation and what was appropriate. The case strikes at the heart of what college sports stands for, continued Christopher. Ole Miss will file its notice of appeal early next week, and that's what Ross Bjork, the AD at Ole Miss, said, and will submit materials that it will also make public on its website. He said that process from appeal should take about 3 to 6 months to complete. There's anger, he said. There's frustration. There's sadness. But now we have to get back to work. Good thing they, kept Matt Luke on as the coach because no one else would want to be a part of this. According to the NCAA, 6 football staff members and 12 boosters were involved in the violations, which included the provision of approximately $37,000 to prospects through cash payments, use of cars, lodging, transportation, meals, and apparel. 2 staff members also helped arrange fraudulent test scores for 3 people. Come on now. Hugh Freeze, who resigned for off-field issues this past July, you remember that, calling the hookers on the cell phone, received a 2-game conference suspension from the NCAA for failure to monitor his staff. What's he getting suspended from? He doesn't have a job. The suspension applies for only head coaching positions. No restrictions if he takes a job as a coordinator or an assistant. Off the field, Freeze promoted an atmosphere of compliance and expected his staff to abide by the rules, the ruling said. However, throughout his tenure, the head coach also violated NCAA head coach responsibility legislation because he failed to monitor his program's activities surrounding the recruitment of prospects. Members of his staff knowingly committed recruiting violations, submitted false information on recruiting paperwork, and failed to report known violations. Hughes did issue a statement saying he was relieved at the decision and would not appeal his suspension, saying, "While I appreciate the COI's recognition of my compliance efforts, I am disappointed that the COI found that in some instances I failed to monitor my staff appropriately." He says, "I believe I made every effort to do so." Ole Miss was also penalized with scholarship reductions. The university, as part of the self-imposed penalties, had already cut 11 scholarships over a 4-year period from 2015 to 2018. The school has been put on probation for 3 years and must vacate the records of all regular season and postseason wins in which ineligible student-athletes competed. Ole Miss also got to pay some money, too. The ruling said the violations resulted from a culture of rules violations being acceptable in the Mississippi football program. Members of the football staff were often in regular contact with the boosters, who provided impermissible inducements and benefits. You know, cars, money, girls, that kind of stuff. Further, the football staff at times did not report known violations and falsified recruiting paperwork. NCAA spokeswoman Stacey Osborne confirmed that Ole Miss seniors will be allowed to transfer without penalty because of the postseason ban for 2018. The seniors can. So juniors, sophomores, freshmen, you're screwed. According to NCAA rules, it is not necessary for an institution to obtain permission in writing to recruit a student athlete at an institution that has been placed on probation with sanctions that preclude it from competing in the postseason competition during the remaining seasons of the student athlete's eligibility. So like I said, juniors, sophomores, freshmen, you're screwed because you got to sit out a year if you're going to transfer, and why wouldn't you want to transfer from what's going on at Ole Miss? Bjork, the AD, attempted to clear up the confusion over the possibility of players transferring, saying anyone with multiple years of eligibility would have to file the waiver, like I just said, with the NCAA to transfer and play immediately. The poaching is already happening, he said, of other schools coming after Ole Miss players, adding that anyone contacting underclassmen at this time would be breaking the rules, and Ole Miss knows all about breaking the rules. Nearly every coach named in the NCAA's notice of allegations received a show cause penalty, which means any school that wants to hire them must appear before the NCAA Committee of Infractions to do so. Former Rebel assistant coach Dave Saunders, he's got an 8-year show cause penalty. Chris Vaughn, 5 years. Chris Kiffin, 2 years. And staff member Barney Farrar has got 5 years. We're among those disciplined by the NCAA. Kiffin can remain in his role as an assistant at FAU, but he can't recruit off campus for the next 2 years during the penalty. And Ole Miss has agreed to forfeit its share of SEC postseason revenues for this coming season. It's going to be about $8 million. Rebels were also told by the NCAA to disassociate themselves from each of the boosters named in the notice of allegations. You know these boosters are going to find a way to get the money to these players anyway. They're going, hey, I can't do it, so here, you go do it for me. That ain't going to happen. Mississippi lacked control over its boosters and oversight of football recruiting activities. The ruling continued, although the institution is now attempting to manage its boosters, this case is symptomatic of an out-of-control culture that has existed for, believe it or not, decades. Ole Miss officials had hoped the NCAA would toss out testimony of Mississippi State linebacker Leo Lewis, who told the investigators that he received between $13,000 and $15,600 from a booster while he was being recruited. Ole Miss disputed the charges that Lewis and Mississippi State defensive end Kobe Jones received free merchandise from Rebel Rags, you know, swag, sportswear, you know, that kind of stuff. Ole Miss Chancellor Jeffrey Vitter called the handling of the investigation over the last year and a half grossly unfair. He said it was around that time that he felt the school was being left in the dark, specifically regarding the testimony of Lewis. Bjork said the university was shocked and that the NCAA Committee on Infractions found Lewis credible. He said, we want to access the facts, and we felt we were shut out to the facts. Here's a real easy thing to do. If you're feeling like you're being shut out of the facts, don't break the rules. It's that simple. Ole Miss, we knew this was going on. They tried to lay it on the feet of the Right Reverend Houston Nutt. Houston Nutt said, no, this is not on me. This is Hugh Freeze's mess, and that's why... Well, part of the reason Hugh Freeze got fired, like I said earlier, calling the hookers on the cell phone, that didn't help whatsoever. So, Ole Miss, you're in a world of hurt for the next couple years. You know who's going to be hurt most by this is Shea Patterson, because he is an underclassman. He's got to wait to transfer. He's got to sit out a year or get the waiver, and you know how the NCAA is on granting those waivers. They slow-foot it the whole way through, and then you'll be halfway through the season and going, okay, yeah, sure, you can play, but you've already lost half the season. The NCAA does this every time. This time it is deserved to the school, but not to players like Shea Patterson. I know Alabama's already looking at the receivers that Ole Miss has because, you know, Ridley, he'll be off to the NFL this year, and they're going to have to replace him with somebody because not really a skill position that Alabama really goes after, even though you could say Julio Jones went to Bama. Yeah, but you can't really think of a whole lot of other good receivers that did. Anyway, that's enough of the crime and punishment. Let's get into the dumpster fire, and we'll do that next. Talk in Tennessee with Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. He has been right in the heart of it the whole time. The guy is probably too tired to talk. We'll find out after the break. You're listening to University of Fish. I am the professor on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
We're joined now by Josh Ward of WNML in Knoxville, the heart of Vol Country. And Josh, you've had lots of content to talk about this week, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been filled with topics from Tennessee's coaching search, which has been a mess, and now Tennessee looking for a full-time athletic director. That could be Philip Fulmer, because he's going to be introduced this afternoon as the athletic director. But is that for now, or is that for the long term to replace John Curry? And Philip Fulmer was a candidate to be the athletic director earlier this year. We'll see. But Tennessee has all kinds of issues to try to get figured out.
Okay, let's go a little bit back in the timeline, because I know there might be two or three people out there that have no idea what's going on at Tennessee right now. Butch Jones, horrendous season, worst season Tennessee's ever had, 0-8 in the SEC. He gets let go earlier in the season. No, he was not going to finish the season. And then looking for a new coach. Greg Schiano, not a bad coach to have, possibly, from the defensive coordinator at Ohio State. You know, was down there at Tampa for a while, was the head coach at Rutgers. That didn't go over too well, did it?
No, it was a disaster on Sunday, and I think that started to lead to the end when John Curry was trying to hire Greg Schiano on Sunday. It fell apart. I think that led to a lot of issues behind the scenes, with some people saying, should John Curry be leading the search? Should he be leading Tennessee's athletic department? And obviously the decision by the end of the week is no. So I think that was the beginning of all of these issues. If Tennessee goes out and tries to hire somebody else this past weekend, it probably would have had somebody hired by Sunday or Monday. But because of that, you ran into other problems, and now Tennessee is looking for both a coach and an athletic director, and the athletic department still has major questions to answer, which is going to hurt, I would still say, moving forward in trying to find a coach to replace Butch Jones.
Now, we also know that, you know, Mike Gundy was reached out to. Jeff Braum was reached out to. We talked about Dan Doran. Then Mike Leach comes up Thursday night. How much influence has the Haslam family had in all of this?
I would say a lot of influence. I think they always have a lot of influence. They have over the years with other hires, whether it be coaching hires, the athletic director hire to bring in John Curry, and that's been an issue among Tennessee fans as well. So, yeah, the Haslam family has been involved with UT for a while in a number of different ways, and they have given a lot of financial support to UT, both athletics and academics. The Haslams have their names on a number of big buildings at Tennessee, and with that has come, I'd say, a good amount of influence with what happens at UT. And sometimes they've helped in good ways in that, and other times Tennessee has made bad decisions, and they've been connected to that as well.
Now, what would your overall outlook on the Haslams being? Luckily, the company we work for is not tied into the Haslam, so we're not at jeopardy of losing our jobs because of speaking out against them. But what has your thought been on the Haslams this past week?
Well, I would actually, I would just have more questions about, okay, what has been the real involvement? Because another issue with Tennessee that's often brought up is that you have too many cooks in the kitchen with the Vols. And part of that could be with Jimmy Haslam and his involvement. A lot of Tennessee fans are saying we're the Tennessee Browns, because the Haslam family also owns the Cleveland Browns. And the Browns are an embarrassment in the NFL, and UT is an embarrassment in college football. So I think it goes beyond just the Haslam family. I think that's easy. I think that might be part of the issue, but there are others that have been involved with this, and there are questions about Peyton Manning's involvement, about Philip Fulmer's involvement, about the chancellor and the president, and then, of course, now former AD John Curry. So there are a lot of questions, I would say, still to be answered.
Now, of the coaches you could have had this week of the long list of them, who do you think would have been the best fit, which doesn't really matter because they're not going to be there, but who do you think would have been the best fit there in Knoxville, and who do you think they're looking at going forward?
Well, I think the best fit, you could go a number of different ways with that. Somebody like T. Martin would be a good fit. Is he good enough to be Tennessee's coach and compete for SEC championships? I don't know about that, but T. Martin would be a good fit because he would have a lot of support from Tennessee fans and former players. With T. Martin having won a national title at Tennessee as a coach, could he now get an opportunity? Maybe so. Les Miles would probably fit in okay because he understands the pressure of a big SEC job. Could he get into play now? Potentially. So that could be a name to watch and somebody that would, again, fits an interesting word. The person that fits in at Tennessee is the person that can win. Right now it's going to be difficult, I think, for anybody to win at Tennessee. And I think Mike Leach would have been an interesting fit, but I think Mike Leach could have been somebody that if he were hired, he wouldn't have worried about any of the mess that's gone on before. He would have come in and just done his job. So would Mike Leach fit in at UT? I don't know, but he would have been a nice fit to deal with the problems that Tennessee has tried to correct. So ultimately, if you don't win, you don't fit in at Tennessee, and Tennessee struggled to find a big picture consistent winner for a while now.
Now, a couple more questions for Josh Ward today. He is right there in the heart of Knoxville with WNML, and he talks Vols every day. Now, when you look at someone possibly like Lane Kiffin ever coming back to Knoxville, because I know he likes trolling the Vols, especially this week, could Kiffin ever come back?
Yeah, that would stun me, especially with Philip Fulmer now being the athletic director, that Philip Fulmer would hire the coach that replaced him 9 years ago. I don't see that as a possibility. I don't think it's ever been a possibility. I don't think that's anything John Curry was going to consider. I could be completely wrong, and I would be if that ended up happening, but I don't think Lane Kiffin will be in the picture at Tennessee.
Now, when Tennessee finally does find a head coach, what does that press conference look like? Do they get up and go, hey, glad I was the 14th choice? I mean, how does that look?
Nothing's going to look great right now for Tennessee, probably. Again, it does depend on who it is. Is it a Tennessee guy? Is it somebody that has connections to the university? Things do change now that it's not John Curry that's introducing the coach, because if it's John Curry introducing the coach, then you are talking about coach number 10, 11, 12, 13 down the list of candidates. But Philip Fulmer could potentially go get his number one choice, his choice. It wouldn't be the number one guy on Tennessee's list from the last 3 weeks. So the fact that John Curry won't be introducing the next coach might help in terms of the presentation, but it still is an awkward time and it's a challenging time. Recruiting is a big focus right now, and Tennessee can't do it realistically with any kind of success. And that's just something Tennessee has to fight against. So depending on who the coach is and what his connection is to UT will affect what fans think of the next coach.
Now, last question for Josh Ward of WNML. It was all over the Twitter sphere early Friday that maybe Philip Fulmer was sabotaging Curry. Is there any truth to that, and what's the thought around Knoxville?
I don't know. I can't give you a good answer one way or the other. I know that Bruce Feldman and Brett McMurphy are two national college football writers that are very good at their jobs, in my opinion, and very good reporters and have been doing it for a long time. And their information is, as far as I'm concerned, very rock solid, and that is their opinion. That is their reporting on what has occurred. So I can't tell you for sure. You never count anything out with Tennessee. And remember, Philip Fulmer did replace Johnny Majors, a Tennessee legend, in the early 90s to become the head coach. So I can't tell you for certain, but I can tell you that I think Bruce Feldman and Brett McMurphy, who have reported that, are very good at their jobs.
Yeah, they do know their stuff. Josh Ward, get you some KO Peck Date or some Pepto-Bismol, because I know that you're iron deficient right now because your head's spinning so much with what's going on in Tennessee. Thank you for joining the University of Fish this morning.
Hey, you got it. Thanks a lot.
I know my head's still spinning thinking about all that now, but when we get back, we're going to start talking about games that will be played today, and we'll start off with University of Central Florida, trying to be that group of five in the New Year's Six game. We'll be talking to Mark Moses from the great space coast of Florida when we get back right here on Extra Sports 1300. I am the professor. You're listening to University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
We're now joined by a good friend of the University of Fish. You've heard him here a few times before, Mark Moses from the great space coast of Florida. And there's been lots of action on the Florida coast this week, and there could be even more later today. But let's talk about the two games being played today that affect the state of Florida. And we'll start off with the conference championship game in the All-American Conference, or whatever they call it, the American Athletic Conference, the AAC, we'll just call it that. Memphis taking on UCF. I know you have been able to see UCF a lot this year. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, it's great hearing from you. I appreciate coming on your show. And personally, I don't want to keep coming on because that means there's still crazy headlines here in Florida, all right? It never ends. I just want a calm week, but I understand. Now, the American game coming up today, hey, this is going to be a shootout. What did T.O. used to say in the Cowboys? Get the popcorn ready. There's going to be a lot of offense, probably not a lot of defense. It's going to be a high-scoring game, just like we had last week with UCF and South Florida. Memphis put up 70 last week. These two teams met earlier in the year. UCF put a pounding on them. But I think Mike Norvell and Memphis, I think he's going to be ready for UCF today. This is going to be a back-and-forth shootout. I'm telling you, if you love offense, you like nice weather, this is the game for you. I think UCF's going to get it done. I think the magic season continues. But I wouldn't be shocked if Memphis shows up and scores 50 on UCF as well.
So you think it's going to be a Big 12 game pretty much?
Yeah, pretty. Hey. UCF wanted to go to the Big 12, and maybe this is their resume builder, showing what type of football they can bring to the table. Maybe that's what it is, Tim.
It could be. I agree with you. I know that since they got just waxed by UCF the first time, Memphis has been putting up pretty much video game numbers. It's been ridiculous. I mean, it's like me sitting there playing the old NCAA football, an Oklahoma-Baylor game on that or something. I mean, it's been craziness. But I like craziness in college football. I know I need to take some iron supplements because I'm dizzy. I'm feeling weak because of everything that's been going on in college football. I can't keep up. I really can't. So I'm going to pick UCF to win this game as well. And you'll hear me pick that later with Angelique Shengelis, the Angel of the Big House, during Fish's Picks, but you got an early preview of that right now. But right now, my biggest question is, does Scott Frost say at the podium after winning the championship, hey, we're going to a New Year's Six game, but offensive coordinator is going to be the head coach because I'm going into Nebraska?
Would anything shock you? Honestly?
This week, no.
At least Scott Frost is going to coach this game. Jimbo Fisher decided to step down before his finale at Florida State. So at least Frost is going to do that for UCF football. And honestly, the way this week's been going, nothing is shocking anymore. And I think Frost is going to take the Nebraska job. He grew up there. He played there. I think he's going to be the guy that's going to fix Nebraska football. UCF's going to be just fine moving forward. Huskers need help. He's the guy to get it done. And that's going to be a long project, by the way. Don't think he's going to show up, Mary Poppins wand, and then fix the Huskers in the Big Ten West. That is going to take some time there in Lincoln. But I could see him. I could see that happening after the game and then saying, all right, I'm going to accept the job. I mean, especially the last couple days with college football carousel, I could see that happening, Tim.
Well, you brought up Christmas Tree Gate. I didn't, so we'll go there. Jimbo Fisher leaves his Christmas tree out on the corner like it's trash on December 1st. That was obviously a big clue to, hey, he ain't going to be there for the holidays. He is going to A&M, and he will be in Aggieville. Stepping down before you keep the longest bowl streak alive in the country, I think Monroe could come up and beat him today because of all the distractions.
You're absolutely right. It has been a crazy week, and what happened here on, I believe, was it Wednesday? You know, he does the weekly coaches show. And every college does that, where, you know, the play-by-play guy gets coach on. They take the softball questions from fans. Well, in Tallahassee, it's on radio and TV. So what happened was some guy got up to the podium and started asking Jimbo Fisher, hey, where's the loyalty? You always told fans be loyal to Florida State. Well, where's the loyalty, coach? And they had to get an actual Florida State assistant to get that guy off the mic and push him out of the place there where they're holding the coach's show. And Jimbo didn't answer anything. Jimbo's been silent this whole week. We all knew what's going to happen. He left. And here's the thing. I think it was so damaged by, especially Friday, Tim, I don't think he could have come back. Like, you couldn't have, like, well, you know, I've decided I'm going to stay at Florida State. No one trusted him because he kept every single offseason applying for other jobs. I mean, a lot of people are going, why didn't he take the LSU job last year? Well, he decided not to. He waited for a better offer. He got a better offer. He's going to probably make around $7 million and be top three in coaching salaries. Isn't that insane?
Oh,
but it's true.
It's horribly insane. And for the first time in your lifetime, not mine, but the first time of your lifetime, because you're just a kid.
Oh, come on.
Florida State has a coaching search going on.
I know.
41 years. For the first time in 41 years, Florida State doesn't know who their next head coach is going to be. Because you had Bobby Bowden there forever. They put Jimbo Fisher there as the coach in waiting, and then he took over as soon as Bowden decided he was done. Well, as soon as he got ahead of Joe Pa, pretty much. But they're looking for a head coach. Where do you think Florida State goes? Any
all
ideas?
All I know is it's going to be a better search than Tennessee, okay? It's all I know. It's the only thing I could tell you here on a Saturday morning. It's going to be better than that. There's Willie Taggett rumblings. Look, they might, you know, maybe they promote someone from within. It's so crazy right now. Hey, maybe Scott Frost shows up and says, I'd like Florida State. Anything is possible.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, anything's possible, man, when you look at this opening. I agree with you. Remember, Monday of this week, I had to go cover Dan Mullen being introduced at Florida. That was Monday. This is Friday, Saturday, into the weekend. That's how crazy this is, man, when you look at this thing going on in Florida.
We're talking with Mark Moses from 1560, Super Sports 1560, there on the Great Space Coast, or is it the Fan? I always get all these stations mixed up. I know it's 1560, and I know you're in Florida. You can tune into him. He's on every weekday. But, Mark, okay, you said you brought up Tennessee as well, so we'll go there as well. I'm going to try to get Josh Ward on today, and we're still trying to work that out. He works for WNML up there in Knoxville as well. He's been following this very, very closely. But is that not just a dumpster fire and making them pretty much the butt of every joke in college football right now?
See, it's so crazy that I agree with you. But then, you know what? I think Tennessee made the right decision getting rid of John Curry, the athletic director. This guy had no idea what he was doing. He tried hiring like 8 or 9 different coaches. You know what? You gotta get rid of him. And they did. Now maybe you're going to have Philip Fulmer as your athletic director. I think they're making the right decision now. Start over. Get your AD. Then go get your coach. Now, are they behind everyone else now? Yeah. It looks bad. Everyone's making fun of them nationally, but I think you had to get rid of the athletic director. The question for you, Tim, is once they finally get a coach, what does that coach say at that press conference? What does he say? I'm happy that I was your first selection, and then ha, 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 everyone starts laughing? Like, what happened to that press conference? It's so bad that it would have been smarter to just have Butch Jones as the coach for 2018. That's how crazy it is right there. So we'll find out with that soap opera.
Well, you know, and it could be played off that, you know, hey, look, because Curry and sources close to the Tennessee program are saying that Fulmer would have been sabotaging the whole thing. And I know that Haslam has not been real helpful in this whole coaching search as well, because every time that they'd put someone up, Haslam would go, no. And when you have that much power and that much, you will, that much influence in a program, we're talking about the Cleveland Browns owner, the truck stop magnate himself, Flying J and Pilot. And, you know, if it's truckers, it's got to be Tennessee. But now, I think Haslam has had a big thing to do with this. I think Curry was actually going after some really good coaches. Schiano's a good coach. And Schiano said, no, Gundy is a good coach. He worked this into a $650,000 a year raise. because he got a raise Friday morning from Oklahoma State. So T. Boone Pickens going, hey, give him more money. So in 4 or 5 years we do this again, because that's what he did with Tennessee last time. And he also interviewed with Florida. Gundy's just trying to make a travesty of all this as well. I don't like the mullet. I mean, there's no love lost between me and the mullet. I played against him in high school. Didn't like him then. He coaches a team I hate, so you know it makes it real easy to not like Gundy. But I don't like how he's leveraging these interviews for a raise. We both work for the same company. I'm wondering if I go interview somewhere else, if they're going to give me a raise. But if you followed us in the news this week, you know that ain't happening.
No. You know what it is, Tim? You know what it is? What we need to do is we'll go into our GM's office and be like, I need better facilities. If I don't get better facilities in the studio, I am leaving for a better job.
You know what? And I don't think that would work out very well for us right now with how our company's doing. Our company's doing great. Let's just make sure we say that. Our company is doing great. Revenue is up. Wonderful time to work for our company. But talking with Mark Moses, who may still be working on the great space coast of Florida. I may still have a show next week. I don't know. Mark, who's going to be in the Final Four come tomorrow morning?
Ooh, an actual football question. I like it. Not nuttiness. That's pretty good. Okay. I believe it's going to be Auburn, Wisconsin, Miami, and Oklahoma. I'm going complete chaos. No one had that in August, September, October, and most of November. That is going to be my pick, Tim, here on the show.
We agree on 50% of that. I'm not going to say what 50% because I'll reveal that later in the show during Fish's Picks. So I'll keep you in suspense as well. But Mark Moses from 1560 on the great space coast of Florida, heard every weekday there on 1560. Tune into him. He's got a great show. It's even better when he has me on it, but then again, that's a whole other subject.
Mark, hey, man, it's so funny. I love it.
Mark, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, have a nice weekend, all right?
We got to take another break, but when we get back, we're going to talk a little SEC championship game. That's right, Georgia, Auburn, and we'll be talking to someone who writes about the Bulldogs each and every day. When we come back here on the University of Fish, I am the professor, and you're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
We're now joined by Mark Weiser, the Athens Banner Herald, making that long drive all the way to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. Mark, how you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing good. I'm the championship Saturday. Some great games on the slate. And, of course, one of the highlights of the day has got to be Auburn-Georgia, the rematch. I think we're going to see a little different game than the 40-17 we saw a few weeks ago, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, you would think that was kind of an outlier game for Georgia. They pretty much steamrolled their competition this season before and after that game. I mean, you had the one-point win at Notre Dame, a 14-point win at home against South Carolina, but everything else has been basically around 25 points and more. And that was, things kind of snowballed on Georgia. They had a lot of what they're calling boneheaded type plays, bad decisions that turned into penalties, muffed punts. But, they also were dominated on the lines of scrimmage, both offensively and defensively. And they need to be able to push the other team back. They need to be able to get more, be more physical in the trenches. And that's going to be a key for this one.
We saw this past week against Georgia Tech that they were very physical in the trenches. How are they going to do that against a little bit tougher front with Auburn?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think one thing is that they've switched up their personnel a little bit. They have a new starting right guard on the offensive line, Ben Cleveland. He's kind of a man-child, 6'6", 335 pounds, redshirt freshman. Admitted he was pretty raw last year coming in out of high school. But he's the redshirt year did him well. He's developed. He has better technique, and he's a guy that's kind of a people mover with it, which they need in this run game against a really big and talented defensive front for Auburn. Whether Georgia, it would help if Georgia can hit some of these one-on-one coverages downfield, loosen up the defense a little bit, maybe have less 7 and 8 man boxes, and give Georgia's Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel a little bit more room to run.
Now, when it comes to defending Auburn, You know, we still don't know exactly how Kerryon Johnson's going to be come game day, but you've got to stop Jarrett Stidham because he can throw the ball around. How are you going to get pressure on him?
Well, you know, Kirby Smart said this week that in terms of getting pressure, that they do a lot of, seven and eight-man protections. Whether you want to take a chance and bring the house and leave yourself vulnerable on the other side when you have a receiver like Ryan Davis, who's very good at the underneath stuff, the bubble screens. You also have, Auburn also can go deep, made plays downfield as well. It'll be interesting to see. They didn't get much from Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy, the two of the better pass rushers they had last game. They have a redshirt sophomore, DeAndre Walker, who's come on the last couple of games. It'll be interesting to see if he gets a little more playing time. Maybe he could be an answer.
Now, when you're looking at Georgia on offense, now you got to get more out of Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. And, of course, Fromm's got to play almost out of his mind against this Auburn defense. What do you think the keys for Georgia when they do have the ball is going to be?
You know, it may be a little bit less predictable. I mean, they have some talented tight ends that they can, maybe turn to a little bit. Isaac Mata, Charlie Warner, these are guys that really didn't get targeted much the last time. Maybe they have some more trick plays up their sleeves, maybe some jet sweeps. Get the ball on Mecole Hardman's hand. He's an explosive playmaker on special teams. He had a nice ball downfield one-on-one. And then Jake Fromm has been hitting he's been hitting Javon Wims a lot on these 50-50 balls. He's emerged as Georgia's leading receiver, kind of overshadowing Terry Godwin. Georgia didn't throw the ball much. They need to be able to be a little less predictable on first down, maybe open it up and pass the ball a little more.
Now we're grabbing our crystal ball. We're looking at the end of the game. How long of a drive is it going to be back to Athens, or will it be a shorter drive because it's not going to be with a heavy heart?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot's going to depend on not only if Kerryon Johnson plays, but how much he's able to. Is he going to be the Kerryon Johnson that Auburn has been relying on for 30 carries a game, or is he going to be a guy that can get you 12 to 15 touches? That could be a big difference, but this game is not in Auburn. It's not at Jordan-Hare. It's at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's hard to say exactly how many Georgia fans will be there. If they're going to, eat up 60% of the tickets and kind of take advantage of the secondary market to make it more of a home game for Georgia. I know that Auburn lost at Clemson. They lost at LSU. They're a different team. They dominated Georgia and won pretty comfortably against Alabama. So maybe a change of venue will do Georgia well. I think Georgia's, I'm picking Georgia to win by about a field goal, so we'll see how that turns out.
Well, Mark, we'll see how it turns out, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you later because we're either going to be in the playoffs or it's going to be a New Year's Six game because we know Georgia has had that kind of season. I'm kind of pulling for them to be in the playoff and not in a New Year's Six because I'm not an Auburn fan. I've got to just be honest about that. I do not like Auburn, never have, and probably never will. Well, Mark Weiser of the Athens Banner-Herald, thank you for joining us this morning on the University of Fish.
Hi, good to be with you.
Well, so far we've talked about UCF and the AAC. We've talked about the SEC. We've also talked about Tennessee and their coaching history. Now, what are we going to do next? You're saying, wait, the show should be over. We're going 2 hours today. Extra University of Fish for you on championship weekend. So when we come back the next hour, we'll be talking Big 12 with Brooke Pryor from the Daily Oklahoman right here on the University of Fish. I am the professor. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300. Hang on for hour two.